special guest time here on That's So Cincinnati. I'm excited to welcome a Hamilton County auditor, Bridget Kelly, and not the least of which is we're not going to get deep in the weeds about assessments, but maybe she can answer some of the questions you all have been texting me. So I'm very excited, but we're going to talk about a lot of things with her today. She has been on the job 6 months.
Quite a way to start.
Let's talk about that actually. Let's like kind of dive into like your current job and then we'll go back. So you run for Hamilton County Auditor, and that's kind of like a 2-year process from announcing and everything. You replaced Dusty, past podcast guest. Good luck being as controversial as he was. I don't know. But, you know, did you realize you were jumping in at this time when Hamilton County was getting its big 6-year assessment?
Well, first, I want to just say thank you for having me on the podcast. It's really good to be with you. And I mean, we've certainly started out with a bang. So I was sworn in as auditor in March to replace Dusty Rhodes, who had been the auditor for 8 terms or 32 years. So that's a lot of institutional knowledge going out the door. And now I don't think I'm ever going to be as prolific on Twitter as Dusty, but I do hope that I can continue the work that he did with a great team providing excellent service to taxpayers and being really transparent and accurate in our work. And so that's something, you know, that we've been working really hard to continue with a great team in the auditor's office. So, you know, we have a few challenges, you know, getting started with our full reappraisal, but I think there's a ton of room for us to grow and continue to elevate the level of service that we give for taxpayers in the county.
When you said 30 some years as county auditor, Dusty Rhodes, the first thing I thought about was that is a lot of gas pump stickers.
That is a lot of gas pump stickers. That's a lot of work for our weights and measures team to go out and verify that folks are getting what they pay for at the gas pump or the grocery store. We have an awesome weights and measures team.
And that's the reason I brought it up, because we're going to talk about the assessments. But Sherry, I thought it'd be good to start, because most people's contact with the auditor's office is in regards to their property, but that's not all you do. What is under the scope of the Hamilton County Auditor?
Thanks so much for that question, because
Bridget, I did not tell him we talked yesterday. Like, this was a big, we've talked yesterday, and this is, we really went into all of this. So it's like, Burl can read my mind. I don't know.
I think that's high praise, Sherry. So I think most people know that the auditor is the chief financial officer for the county, the chief real property assessor, and the chief payroll officer. I think some other duties that we have that people don't always know about is we're responsible for weights and measures. So making sure that your gallon is a gallon at the gas pump or your pound is a pound at the grocery store. We act as an arm of the state in administering the CAUV, the Agricultural Land Use Program, the owner-occupied tax credit, and the homestead exemption. We do vendor licenses, cigarette licenses, dog licenses. So we really touch every township, municipality, school district, taxing entity in the entire county. The caveat to our responsibilities is also and other duties assigned by the legislature. So sometimes it seems like when they don't know what to do with something, they're just like, give it to the auditors. They'll figure it out. But like I said, we have a great team working on all aspects of this. But, you know, it's not necessarily top of mind to people when they think about the auditor's office to think about some of those other responsibilities.
So when you mentioned weights and measures, you had a funny little weights and measures question that you guys answered that you would never think about. What was that?
So it's interesting. So auditors can be requested to verify scales for different things in our community. And so I've heard stories about wrestling tournaments, people being interested in verifying scales for that. Dispensaries, you know, certainly we do supermarket scanners. So a whole host of things. But You know, in the auditor's office, we have about 77 people. So we're about half the size of the Franklin County auditor's office and about 20% smaller than the Montgomery County auditor's office. So we have a really lean team who is responsible for, you know, a whole plethora of different responsibilities, none the least of which is revaluing all of the 350,000 plus parcels in Hamilton County this year.
So that process is going on right now, the revaluing of it?
That has actually been ongoing. So as you can imagine, that's a big process. So the state of Ohio directs us every 6 years to revalue every parcel of property in the county. And that means we have to have a physical viewing of it. They also direct us that we have to look at each property in the same way. So we use a mass appraisal system. We look from the outside. So a little bit different than if you are trying to get a loan for a house or something like that, where somebody comes in and, you know, checks out every nook and cranny of your place. And then the state also approves our tentative values. So the state directs us to revalue all the properties every 6 years. They direct us on how to do it, and then they approve our tentative values. And that's what we've shared with people in the community because we want folks to know what's going on. We want to be transparent about our process, and we want to be accurate in our valuations. You know, we get questions sometimes from people who say, you know, you just changed my value 3 years ago. And so we do that as an interim statistical update. But this is really sort of the big deal, which is why it's so time consuming and takes so much of our staff.
Well, and some people already got their letters, right? Telling them.
Correct. So all property owners in Hamilton County, commercial or residential, should have gotten a letter with information about your property, some of the high, you know, level name, address, number of bedrooms, things like that, as well as the tentative value. And this is not something that we are required to do by statute. This is something that we do as a service to taxpayers so they know what's going on. You know, in some counties, folks learn their new value by way of their new tax bill. And we just don't think that's the way that we'd like to work here in Hamilton County.
I feel like that would create a mess later. They don't know.
So I want to ask this because I think this is the question I most often get asked. Because if you work for the newspaper, people assume like you're like know everything, and it's not true. Although I'm well read, but how would you explain the difference between the county's valuation of your property compared to looking it up on Zillow? What's the basic difference that people need to understand there?
Well, so Zillow, I think, uses a lot of other sort of outside information to compile values and things like that. With us, the state directs us, you know, how we have to do it. So we have to use a mass appraisal process because there's no way that we could physically enter 350,000 parcels of property and do something, you know, that in depth. And so we try to use comparable sales and similarly situated houses in neighborhoods in order to come up with the most accurate value for someone's house. And some of that, Burl, is from sales data because, you know, what's something worth is what somebody willing to pay for it. And that's a question that we get a lot is, you know, sort of how do we get there? So I think that would be sort of the biggest thing is we are, I think, using a more scientific method and a more consistent method in order to come up with that value.
And you have that sales data yourself in the system because you record it, right? You're not relying on the MLS, which had its own problems earlier this year and created a lot of problems for our local realtors.
Correct. So we have a whole department who works on real estate valuation, both during the reappraisal and in the interim. So we use that sales data in terms of our appraisal areas and to figure out, okay, you know, do Sherry and Burl actually live in similar houses? You know, is there something really different about that? You know, we'll get a lot of interesting feedback from people who will say, you know, well, I haven't done anything to my house besides put in a new kitchen and tear out walls and finish my basement. So I don't understand my value. But, you know, those things do have an impact. Now, you change out your bathroom faucet, probably not so much of an impact. But we really are trying to be deliberate about comparing apples to apples in terms of, you know, homes that have been recently updated and things of that nature versus homes that have been well loved and cared for, but maybe not updated recently. And it's not a perfect process. You know, as everybody knows, I mean, you can imagine we're getting a lot of love letters at our office asking questions about, you know, how we reached this valuation or letting us know that things are correct or incorrect, which we really appreciate. And I would encourage people to get on our website at hamiltoncountyauditor.org and make sure the information about your property is correct, because that really helps us to come up with an accurate number. And so we really, again, just want to make sure that people know what's going on, and we try to be as transparent as possible about the process, because it's confusing. You know, people have a ton of stuff going on. Property taxes in Ohio are extraordinarily complicated for a myriad of reasons. And it's frustrating, I think, for people to get this in the mail that says this is the new value of your house. And a lot of people, their next question is, well, what's my property tax obligation going to be?
And that is not an easy question to answer.
It is not an easy question to answer. It's not something easy to calculate. And frankly, we don't have the final values that have to be approved by the state. We don't have the effective tax rates. We don't have the rollbacks. We don't know what levies are going to pass or not. So it's all but impossible to come up with a good number, with a sound estimate for people, so that, you know, 2 or 3 months from now, it's not like, well, you told me X. And it's actually why, because, again, we want to try and be accurate for people.
What is your deadline? Does this all have to be due by January?
This all happens by the end of the year so that we can work with the treasurer to get the tax bills out. So far, the state of Ohio has approved our tentative values, but they will approve our final values before the end of the year. And so if somebody's value has changed between tentative and final, they'll get another letter from us informing them of that. And then all of those final values will be on our website. And our property tax calculator will be a little more accurate so folks can get a better estimate of what their property tax obligation is going to be, because then we'll also have the rates from the state. We'll know what happened with the levies. And so all of those ingredients will sort of be there so we can give people better estimates for that.
I like to play around with the tax calculator.
We're following along, and I want you, so we're not going to get too much more in the weeds on this. Scott Wortman, our county reporter, is writing a story on this, and he is putting a lot, I sit by him some days when we're in the office together. He's putting a lot of effort into this. It is not a simple subject. He will make it easy to read. I have all the faith in the world in him, and I'm going to keep writing about the railroad, and I'm going to let him do that.
Yeah, it is. Property taxes in the state of Ohio are extremely complicated for a myriad of reasons, none the least of which is, you know, over-reliance on property taxes for funding public schools, which has been found unconstitutional for 30 years and hasn't been resolved yet. So maybe in the next 30, that piece of the puzzle will get fixed.
So I do want to talk about something serious for a minute that I don't feel like you've really talked about publicly. As you're doing all of this very hard and important work, and you have put that at the forefront, but you have not talked about something that's going on in your personal life. And I did want to talk a little bit about that because there's such an important message that goes with it. And that is the fact that you're in chemotherapy right now for esophageal cancer. And you have been.
Yeah. So, I mean, I was diagnosed with cancer in April of 2022. So, you know, it was a really interesting time to be running for office and, you know, doing that. But I think when we look around our community, there are a lot of people who have things going on in their lives. A lot of people who, like me, you know, are going through cancer treatments or are going through other things. And it doesn't mean that it's impossible for us to do hard things. It just means that sometimes we have to do them in a little bit of a different way. And so for me, I think, you know, we have a great team in the auditor's office. I'm really excited about the opportunity to serve our county in this way. And frankly, I'm really fortunate to have good healthcare and excellent doctors, because I think that that is a huge piece of the puzzle that, you know, people talk about, but I don't think always really internalize, is that, you know, we're the greatest country on earth and we should have the greatest access to healthcare, you know, regardless of your socioeconomic status, your neighborhood, how much money you make. And so I think with that, you also have to be your own best advocate for your health. And I think that's another really important piece of the puzzle. So I feel really fortunate to, you know, be doing my work in the auditor's office. And again, really fortunate to be able to get the care that I need from some really excellent doctors in our community.
So something else that happened, I think, during your diagnosis is something that I have heard from a lot of my friends who've had diagnosis, is that at first it wasn't, you know, what it was. Can you tell us a little bit about that and how important it is to be your own advocate?
Yeah. So actually the way that we found out that I had cancer was because I was having back pain. And, you know, I was under 40. I was a runner, you know, in really good, you know, decently good shape, good health. And, you know, sometimes I think that the inclination is to say like, oh, you're young, you're healthy, you're fine, you know, go to physical therapy, or, you know, you're okay, let's just keep an eye on it. But I think people know their own bodies and people have to be aware of that. And I think sometimes we're sort of attuned to say like, oh yeah, you know, it probably is nothing. It's probably fine. But you know yourself better than anybody else. And so again, I think it's just really important for people to be their own best advocate in order for all of us to be able to stay healthy and well, whether it's something like cancer or a sinus infection or a stomach ache. I think that that is something that is true for all of those situations.
I do feel like you probably have heard a lot of stories because we've talked about this month that you're doing Men Wear Pink to raise money for breast cancer awareness and treatment. And I feel like you probably have heard a lot of stories.
I have. When I first started volunteering for the American Cancer Society as a Men Wear Pink ambassador, in my mind, it was all about raising money. I was not prepared for the emotional piece of what I'm doing now because of the conversations it has started about the importance of early detection. People who have read about my why and want to share their situation. So unfortunately, it's a conversation that needs to go year round. And I wanted to follow up, Bridget, about you know, your situation, because initially your doctors, you weren't fitting the profile of somebody with esophageal cancer. You kind of breezed through that really quickly. What was that frustrating? How long did it take for you to persevere to finally figure out what was wrong with, you know, you knew something was wrong. Did you initially buy that you know, it could have just been a back strain or something like that? What was the, you know, the investment of your time and emotional energy to get to that diagnosis, to start getting the treatment?
Well, you know, before I was the county auditor, I was in the state legislature, and we keep, you know, in both of these positions, a pretty busy calendar and tend to be pretty busy. And so, you know, it's just kind of one of those things where like, maybe I ran too far, or maybe, you know, I've been doing too much, or maybe I didn't think about I lifted this thing, you know, a different way. And I think, you know, whenever you're talking to somebody, whether it's a medical practitioner or somebody in public service or somebody who's interviewing you for a podcast, you know, you want to be heard and feel like people are listening to you and really hearing you. And so, you know, I think about the flexibility that I had with my job and the flexibility that I had by having good healthcare in order to be able to continue sort of pursuing, you know, like something is not right, you know, because I didn't have a shift job, which made it impossible for me to make a doctor's appointment. You know, I did have healthcare, which meant that I didn't have to pay an exorbitant amount of money every single time that I saw someone. And so I think, you know, for those things, I'm very fortunate to be able to have access to things like that. And I mean, for me, my guardian angel was my cousin, who's an orthopedic nurse. And so she really was one who kept pushing me and pushing me. In order to, you know, finally get the sort of resolution and the care plan that we needed.
And what does that care plan look like? When did it start and where are you in the process?
So just continuing on, you know, through the process. So again, I was diagnosed in April of 2022 and have continued, you know, through different kinds of treatment. And again, I just feel really fortunate to have access, you know, to great healthcare. We're really lucky in Cincinnati to have tons of skilled and talented medical practitioners. And I just feel really fortunate to be able to take advantage of that. And again, you know, coming into the auditor's office, I think in a lot of ways, it's a really good thing to have it being a very busy time with a lot going on, because it means that, you know, I can keep doing the work for the people of Hamilton County. And that's something that I really feel like is truly a privilege. And I'm so grateful to be able to serve in this position.
Well, I think a lot of people are inspired because, as you said earlier, you didn't take this sitting down. You were your own advocate, but you also said, this isn't going to stop me and my mission, my cause, what's important to me. I can still serve in the position I was elected to serve in. And I feel grateful that you decided to share that part of your story with us today.
I mean, it's really important. I think, you know, we talk a lot about, you know, breast cancer or prostate cancer, and, you know, cancer comes in all kinds of different forms. And so I think, you know, people just being mindful of their own health and well-being, because, you know, sometimes you might think something is small, but it's really not. And so, you know, I do think we have a lot of work to do in this country to make affordable health care available to everyone. And so that is something that I will never tire of talking about, because I think that is something that everyone should have easy access to and shouldn't be, you know, making a determining factor in a lot of people's lives.
So Sherry,
and I know you.
We could save the That's So Cincinnati moment to the last segment, or we could just do it now, because
I do it.
Should we do it? So
I
shared with Sherry for our listeners before we started recording that I'm feeling super old today, because this isn't the first Kelly that I've engaged with as a journalist. When I was first starting out, I was still in college, in fact. I was working for what was known as then the Cincinnati Suburban Press. And there was a weekly newspaper serving Norwood called the Norwood Enterprise. And that was my assignment. And I thought it was going to be kind of boring. It was going to be typical suburban news stuff that I had no interest in as a 20-something year old. But no, I got to write about the city of Norwood suing General Motors for shutting down the plant in Norwood. And Bob Kelly, Bridget's father, was the city solicitor, the chief legal officer for the city, and was my main source for all things regarding this lawsuit. And I was, you know, a young reporter trying to prove myself. And looking back, I was probably a little aggressive at times. And there was another lawyer involved by the name of Stan Chesley, who, you know, I didn't have a full
respect. You may have
respect.
Heard of.
You might have heard of him. I didn't, you know, have a full respect of the gravitas of that attorney either. But while Stan Chesley used to, like, get very angry with me and yell back and slam the phone, Bob Kelly was always patient, always took time to explain things. Even if I had screwed something up, he chalked it off to inexperience and wanted to help me get it right. So I've never forgotten. He was one of the people in my early reporting career that helped me out a lot, Bridget. You should know that. So
I really appreciate that. And so I'm glad to be the next generation of Kellys that get to work with you, Burl.
Of Kellys, you know, who are called to public service. So anyway, that's my That's So Cincinnati moment, my flashback to covering the lawsuit.
My That's So Cincinnati moment also involves you then today, which is before I did the podcast, I was doing some council reporting and I was talking to council member Liz Keating, and I said, I have to go to the podcast. And she's like, oh, who's the guest? And I said that you were on. And she's like, oh, I love her. And she went to school with you. And then she revealed this fact, which was that you were your political career, it seems like.
Yeah, Liz and I went to high school together, and my friend Holly and I were co-presidents of our student council and had the good fortune to do that at St. Ursula. But, you know, I think going out knocking doors with my dad when I was younger prepared me for, you know, student council elections, Norwood Council, State House, and now the auditor. But it's, you know, it's really just a privilege to serve in any of those positions. I feel really honored to be able to do so.
Well, that just goes to show you that you have to be very careful about burning any bridges in Cincinnati, because you never know when someone from your past is going to be in your present. So Bridget, thank you for your time today. We wish you the best in your treatment and your recovery. And thank you for taking the time to chat with us today.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.